Good afternoon, Chief Justice. Justice has made it please the court. Santino Chakotay on behalf of the appellant in this matter, Patrick Monso. The chronology of the procedural aspects of this case we feel are important, and if I may, I'd like to begin by giving the court a backdrop of how we're here today. Mr. Monso initially filed a motion to dismiss in the Superior Court regarding the violation of due process and equal protection grounds regarding 779, which has now been amended to be 770, regarding sex offenses from a registered sex offender. The state responded the trial was continued pending a decision, formal decision by the judge. The court followed by asking defense counsel to supplement his motion, and he did so. And when he supplemented it, he resubmitted it without the equal protection argument, so that's not an issue here today, and with the alternative argument that the trial be bifurcated if his motion to dismiss the counts in the indictment was denied. An office conference was held on June 14th, the day before trial, and at the office conference, there was no mention whether the motion was denied or granted. It was simply apparent from the transcript that was recently ordered by this court that they would go the route of a bifurcated trial with these counts. And still, we don't have on the record any decision by the court below as to the motion to dismiss. We present two issues to the court today. The first one being that the court's failure to issue a ruling on the motion to dismiss, and the second involves the constitutionality of the statute itself, which was asked to be dismissed.
Can I interrupt you at this point?
Because certainly.
I may be oversimplifying it. The defense asked for a bifurcated trial as a means of eliminating any constitutional infirmities there may be in that statute. And the court said, okay, we'll have a bifurcated trial. Why do we still have an issue?
That's a good question, Justice Berger. I feel the state takes that simplification that Your Honor just made, and it's out of context what defense counsel asked for. The bifurcated trial was an alternative argument. If the court looks at the motion itself on page 33 in the record, it says, absent dismissal of the counts, assuming arguendo is the language trial counsel used, that these counts are not dismissed, then at the very least, give us a bifurcated trial.
Right, and you got a bifurcated trial, so I think we can all understand that they were not dismissed, right?
That's correct.
So, again, is your argument simply that the court didn't say, I hereby deny the motion to dismiss because I am going to grant the motion for a bifurcated trial, and I find that that resolves the arguments that were raised in the motion to dismiss? The court didn't say those words, and that's why we're here?
The court didn't do much of anything. That's one reason why we're here. As early as this court's decision in Holden, this court was very strong in its language in indicating that part of a trial judge's adjudicative responsibilities is to state the reasons for his or her actions or inactions, no matter how briefly. The issue before the court was a motion to dismiss on constitutional grounds.
Well, isn't it, at least by implication, a finding by the trial judge that the constitutional argument lacks merit when the trial is bifurcated? Because he did not dismiss the case.
Certainly, the inference is it was dismissed. I mean, de facto, we have a dismissal. But this court's holdings indicate that for proper review on appeal, if counsel asked for a constitutional basis, there needs to be some type of legal or factual reason why he denied it.
Well, isn't it established that courts are not supposed to decide matters on constitutional grounds if they can be decided on other grounds? And isn't that effectively what the court did? I am not going to reach the constitutional question because by having a bifurcated trial, it eliminates your constitutional claim?
Your Honor, if he had even come close to the language that you're stating today, I think it'd be a clear, situation, but it's completely devoid. The record is devoid as to his analysis as to the issue of constitutionality.
So you're asking the court to remand and have the trial court say effectively what I just said, and then everything's fine?
As a threshold matter, we would ask that it be remanded for, you know, so that we can conclude what the basis was for the constitutional challenges. Alternatively, though, what we ask here, that we ask below, is that this statute is unconstitutional. We find it as it's a violation of due process.
But again, you're asking the court to reach a constitutional argument when it is not necessary, aren't you?
This court or the court below?
Either one.
Correct. I mean, that concession, if this court wants to infer that this motion was denied and just raise the constitutional issue, we're okay with that as well. We feel that this statute as written by the legislature violates due process. That's the main thrust of the argument below. It was the main thrust here today.
If it didn't affect the outcome of the trial because the trial was bifurcated, why would we issue an advisory opinion on the constitutionality of a statute when it doesn't control the outcome of the case?
That's a good question. And I think it does go to the macro picture of what's going on here. Perhaps from a micro standpoint, in this case, the harm is not as conspicuous had it gone to a jury. But the reality is that the statute can be abused by circumventing rules of evidence. 403, 404, gets long-standing principles of evidence and what's permitted by putting the status of a sex offender right in the charge of the offense itself.
But in this case, there was a new indictment, and that was removed from the indictment. So from the point of view of the jury, the only thing they knew was that this is a standalone offense. And then after he was convicted of the standalone offense in this bifurcated proceeding, in a bench trial, they addressed his status as a prior offender. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. And I respect the view from the chief that these facts and circumstances might not portray or display the harm had they gone to a jury.
Well, isn't one solution, if we write an opinion in this case and hypothetically decided to affirm, is to simply say this is exactly the way the statute should be handled?
That would be one solution, Your Honor. I think one of the concerns from the defense standpoint is that the bifurcation is not in the statute itself. So, if I may just use a sports analogy for what could potentially go on here, it's as you have one fighter who's permitted to throw punches after the bell rings, another fighter is not permitted to do so, and one of the fighter's trainers says, well, you can punch after the bell, but don't do it here. Don't do it in this spot. You might lose your purse. Or for whatever reason,
Well, but going back to the ruling in this case, and one of your concerns is that the judge didn't articulate and why the motion to dismiss was denied, and the questions indicate that one way to read the record is for us to conclude the trial judge was acknowledging you had a point, and that the way the trial judge was going to deal with your constitutional argument that due process was denied is to simply afford your client due process in a bifurcated proceeding.
Correct.
And by doing that, just to follow up on the Chief Justice's question, it became unnecessary to address the constitutional issue because the evils that the constitutional argument was designed to cure had already been cured by the procedure that was directed by the trial judge, thereby rendering any constitutional decision a hypothetical question, mm-hmm. or an advisory opinion, or alternatively, because your client did not suffer any of the harms that were implicit, that is, were identified by the constitutional argument, had no standing to insist that that constitutional argument be decided.
Your Honor, we respect that interpretation, and as I mentioned before, certainly the harm here is not as conspicuous had it been an alternative situation where it had gone to a jury trial. The concern that trial counsel attempted to put forth in the court below, and which we do here, though, is the ramifications of the statute not mandating a bifurcation means that this case, a similar case, could be before the five of you shortly on the same issue.
But there are other statutes that have status as an element of the offense. For instance, possession of a firearm by a person prohibited. Is this case distinguishable from those, or would bifurcation be required across the board whenever status is an element of the crime?
It is distinguishable, Justice Ridgely, for the reason that, for the example that you gave with the persons prohibited, that statute enforces a legislative intent where a prior felony warrants the forfeiture of rights where ordinary citizens have those rights. This is already penalizing conduct that's illegal to everybody. So, to give you an example, and I think we put this in our papers before this court, we feel that this statute is akin to a statute like burglary by a burglar. It's inherent that the character or the status of someone is in the indictment and the charge itself. It's prejudice on its face. So we feel there is a distinction between other statutes and this one. And that's the fear, that by not mandating a bifurcation, since the legislature didn't do that, our fear is that this type of situation could easily go to a jury without bifurcation.
Well, one could make the argument that we, as an institution, the Supreme Court of Delaware, have never encouraged the General Assembly to tell us how a trial ought to be conducted. We make the rash assumption that with 62 members of the legislature and only one practicing lawyer, that they may not be the group best qualified to make decisions about how to conduct a trial. That's hypothetically put.
Mm-hmm.
If we were to write an opinion that stressed that in this case, bifurcating the trial was the correct and proper option to be taken by the trial judge because it cured, as Justice Berger pointed out, the alleged unconstitutional infirmity created otherwise, would that not going forward be a message to every defense counsel to raise the issue, every trial judge to consider it, and every prosecutor to agree that that's the way these cases ought to be handled going forward?
I think it would, Chief. I think it would. I think that's one of the main one of the main concerns here, from at least the standpoint of you know, the defendant and maybe going forward, is that the risk is there. If this court doesn't address it, there's always the possibility that these cases are not going to be bifurcated, and the rules of evidence, such as 403, 404, and the language in Getz, is going to get in front of a jury. I will mention, however, if I may add, the fact that it goes to a bench trial or a jury trial, we still feel that the harm is potentially there. This court in Getz, its own language, indicates that no matter whether the tribunal, being the fact finder, is bench or jury, there's still the natural and inevitable tendency to give access weight to the vicious record of crime thus exhibited. So I don't want to concede too much, in the sense that if these crimes, as they're indicted, goes to bench trials, the risk for prejudice is still there, we would argue. Taking it out of the jury doesn't eliminate all the prejudice. I see I've gone into my rebuttal time.
Can you save the balance?
Sure, please.
All right.
Thank you.
May it please the court, good afternoon, Your Honor. Elizabeth McFarlane on behalf of the state. The state's position here is that the trial went exactly the way it should have gone. It was bifurcated, and that was the correct procedure. It eliminated any taint, and therefore there really is no reason to consider anything beyond what happened. There was no harm in this case. No prejudice whatsoever to the defendant.
Should we take it from your opening comments that it's the state position that in all similar cases, a bifurcated trial is the correct way to handle it?
Unless there's a stipulation by the parties regarding the portion that the defendant is a registered sex offender, in which case the state still believes that it should be, any indictment should be quote-unquote sanitized for a jury, and that status as a sex offender should not be placed before a jury in determining the guilt or innocence of the underlying sexual offenses. That is the state's position. And that was done in this case. The state did not oppose the bifurcation, and there was no mention at all of the status of the defendant in front of the jury.
So is the state's position that as a consequence, and this is basically doctrinal, that this question, that there's no justiciable issue about constitutionality as a result of the procedure that was followed, or is it that it just isn't necessary to reach that issue under the, you know, the doctrine that Justice Berger was referring to, or are we talking about something else, like standing or advisory opinion?
Well, in the first instance, the state would say there's no reason to reach it under, as Justice Berger pointed out, the state certainly does not think there is any issue about the constitutionality of the statute, and in any case, this particular case is not the place to reach.
No issue because the factual underpinning has been removed.
Exactly. And, you know, the recidivist type statutes are generally constitutional in any case, and here there was clearly no prejudice whatsoever to the defendant, and so there's really no issue before the court in terms of the question. The very pleadings by suggesting that a bifurcation cured any prejudice alone resolved the issue. in the state's view. Does the court have any additional questions?
You sounded pretty definitive with the answer there. I wasn't expecting anything else. Do you have any other comments?
No.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Unless the court has any questions, we're prepared to waive rebuttal in this case.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, counsel, for a succinct argument. We have the case in mind. We'll adjourn.
Thank you.